Okay, welcome back. All right. Okay, we're at step 8 and 9. Remember what I said before it starts in the beginning in the first paragraph. It always summarizes what you've done so far. It says, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of the persons we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. The first instruction that I give someone with inventory is to make a first column list and not be too concerned about why the name came. Pray, ask for the names that need to be on the list, and start with that. It's in the second column that I start having them look at it and be realistic. Is there really a resentment here, or is it something else? But I make sure that they keep the list, right? Because of this, because we're going to use it later. There may not have been resentments in connection with it, although I had my first 8-step list had 50 names on it, and every single one of them came out of that list. Every single one of them. It says, we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal, and now we're going to go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. You know, here it calls our 4-step a drastic self-appraisal. I find that if the inventory is written correctly, there's not a lot of input I have to add to it. Although some people's inventories take some deciphering. Going over it the way that I talked about, there's not a lot of extra stuff that needs to come out, because hopefully they've dug in and they've pulled out the things that they need to see. Right? When I listen to it naturally, I try to hear if they're missing something. But the hope is one day they're going to be able to 10th step. Right, and they're going to have to pull this information out on their own while they're in front of people. Right? Continue to take personal inventory. So, but this, I'm just pointing out that here it calls it a self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of the effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. Right, we looked at that all through the inventory. How we were running on self-will, running the show ourselves, trying to run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. One of the things that I do in the beginning where it talks about being willing to go to any length over alcohol, sometimes I make people initial that sentence. Right? Just so that I can go back and remind them. Say, look, we talked about this. You initialed it. Right? It's easy to start to get into further on down the process and to forget that it's about alcohol. Right? And a lot of people want to say, now it's just about my thinking, or now it's just about the way I live. You know, but it's really all connected to alcohol. Because if I'm not willing to make amends, right, then it's usually about fear. Right? So I wasn't really ready to turn to God for help with that stuff in the 7th step. And if that's true, if I got to the 7th step and really wasn't ready to turn to God for help with that stuff, then maybe the problem wasn't even the 7th step, but I didn't really find the parts of my work that I have objectionable enough that I needed to do that. Or, you know, see the defects in my behavior that I needed to see. And if that's true, then maybe the problem wasn't even the 6th step, but maybe it didn't come out in the 5th step because the 4th step really wasn't clear enough to get that stuff out of it. And if my 4th step wasn't written in a thorough, fearless and thorough manner, then maybe the problem wasn't even the 3rd step, but I really wasn't ready to turn to God in that decision, in the third step decision, because that third step decision wasn't humbly made, right? And if the problem was that I really wasn't, that decision to turn to God really wasn't honest, then maybe the problem wasn't even the third step. Maybe the problem went back to the second step, where I really didn't see that I needed a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity, to the extent that I needed to make an honest third step decision. And if that's true, in the second step, I didn't see a power, the need for a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity, then obviously I really didn't get impacted by the insanity that I was looking at in the first step. So really, to not make amends here in the ninth step means I'm thinking that I have the ability to manage my own life and keep myself sober. So I might not be telling myself all of that, but the idea that I don't need to buy the whole package infers that. And maybe I don't need what you guys need, or maybe I really don't need any more God than what I think I already have. Okay? Never realizing here that you've only done, really to this point, done 7 steps out of 12. Because you aren't really getting willing to do any of the ninth step amends. When I get people to this point, I never say they're in the ninth step. I always keep reminding them that they're trying to be in the eighth step. There's a lot of ego with all of, wrapped around some of this stuff, right? You can get really attached to all the notes in your book, get really attached to your knowledge, get real attached to a lot of things, including the idea that you want to be able to tell people you're in the ninth step. But the fact is, you're really in the eighth step, becoming willing, right, to make the amends. And people spend much more time in the eighth step, right, trying to get willing. And the thing that you hear a lot, and know you've heard it, is you're never going to finish the ninth step. Or you can't ever finish the ninth step. And I heard that for the first 9 months of my sobriety until I walked into my home group. And in that home group, you couldn't even share unless you had finished the ninth step. Right? And I would have been happy to go along with the idea that I couldn't. Because it's a lot scarier to know that you don't have to do them all. Yet the book says we made amends to them all. So why is it that some people think that you don't have to? Right? Or is it that they really never finished them themselves? Right? Because obviously if you're pushing the idea that you don't have to finish, right, it will feel a lot better to find people that agree with you than to find people that disagree. Right? I came from a home group that didn't let me sit back and just not finish. And my sponsor and friends needled me about finishing. It wasn't easy. I see that the thing that slowed me down the most was fear. Right? And so much fear that you can just get into the eighth step and just sit there forever. But what do you tell people when you're sitting in the eighth step not doing anything? It's like, well, I'm praying for the willingness to be willing. I never quite understood that. I can understand about, it's a duck. Duck just flew in the door, out the window. Getting out. It flew out. Fell out the window. Okay. It was a sign from God. Or maybe he was lunch and he's escaped. Right. An alcoholic duck. Oh, okay. All right, so where was I? Praying for the willingness to be willing to be willing to be willing. Right. But see, there's, you know, when you go to different spiritual paths, they have different postures, right? Some you sit cross-legged in the meditation and the prayer. Some you sit straight up in a chair with your feet flat on the ground. Sometimes your palms up, sometimes palms down, fingers up, right? There's different types of postures for different types of prayer, right? Have you heard about the eight-step posture or the eight-step prayer? No? All right. Sitting in a chair, feet flat on the ground, eight-step cards in front of you. Right? Phone in your hand, phone number in front of you. First you dial to set an appointment, then you pray your ass off. But don't give it so much thought before you get to that point. Because praying for the willingness of something I want to do next month is just meaning I'm afraid and I want to keep it as far away from me, from reality or my consciousness as I can, because I don't want to sit and think about how, you know, what it would look like. The fact is that it can be scary. Right? But all you need to do in the eighth step is focus on setting the appointment. Just set the appointment. Just make the call. I talked about the cards just now. I mentioned the cards. All of my arms, I stuck on a 3x5 index cards. What I like to do now is I have people I work with make their cards. They put the name of the person that they feel that they harmed, the contact information, and any specific harm that they're aware of. And when they get all that together, we have a meeting, sit down, and go through the cards, and we make piles. I don't tell them which ones to make and which ones they shouldn't make, but we sit and discuss each one of them. And if there's ones that sound like maybe they would cause more harm than do any good and it wouldn't repair anything, maybe even hurt someone more, we have a pile that we call the pray about it pile. Right? And they put little notes on each card, you know, to ask, is this something I really should do, or is it going to cause more harm? Naturally, we have the pile of definitely do. Right? Then we have the pile of absolutely not, right? Because it's obvious that either it wasn't necessarily really a harm, just an effort to be thorough, or it would definitely cause problems, more so than you saving yourself at their expense. Right. So what we're left with is basically a stack to pray about and a stack to do. And out of the ones that they're supposed to do, I ask them to sit and ask, am I willing to do whatever it, if I go to this person, am I willing to do whatever it takes to set this right? And they put a plus or minus on it. Right? And another pile that they make is, I'm absolutely not really ready to go to these people. Right? But these are all, but now we've thinned down the cards to just the ones that they need to do, or the ones they need to become willing to do. And the reason we do it on 3x5 index cards is because instead of a list, we could thumb through the cards, ask God to show me what the next indicated amends is, and one card will pop out. It'll tell you which one is next. And the only thing that you're supposed to do at that point is that eight-step posture. Sit down in front of the phone and start setting as many appointments as possible. And I try to get people to, even if they have to do it months in advance, to sit down and set appointments. Always keep appointments going. The other thing that I like to stress is that you're doing the ones that you say you can do first. You look at it and say, yeah, I can do this. And you do it. Right? The ones you look at and you say you can't do, they go to the back of the list. But what happens is as you get further and further down the list, you start to see that you can do some of the ones that you said you couldn't do in the past. Right? It's kind of like, I kind of associate it with kind of like when I go to the gym, which is like, it seems like every time I go to the gym, they've remodeled it. That's how often I go. Everything's moved around. Not good at that, but I go in and, you know, naturally you're seeing all the guys over here with the big, huge weights and, you know, and it's like, yeah, those are the ones that I want to lift. But I got to start over here on the little ones first. All right? And I start with the ones I could do, you know, and I build up to the ones, to what I can't do. And the power comes. What happens is, as I've gone through the ones that I can do and I get down to the ones that I have to ask for strength to do, as I see that the strength comes, I get the faith and the knowing that the strength to finish it will come. So I'm building up this spiritual muscle, building up this faith that this power will be there. And if I didn't finish amends, I would never have gotten down to that last five that I knew I absolutely could not do on my own. The last five that I told myself, there's no way that I could confront this person with what I had done. Right? But I came from a home group that doesn't just let you sit on that. And I did really want to do it. Even though I didn't want to do it out of fear, right, there was a part of me that saw that there was something that happened in these people's life that is a result of finishing amends. Right? There was an experience with that. I'm still on the eighth step, though. I'm still talking about the eighth step because I'm not even talking about any making amends. I'm still talking about becoming willing to do them. It's the hardest part of the whole deal. And you spend much more time in the fear and in the struggle of it all than the actual action. Because once you've committed to an appointment and you have to show up, right, something else kicks in. And sometimes it's actually easier at that point. Right? And sometimes it's not. But, you know, there was certainly ones that I absolutely did not want to face. There was Lori, the ex-wife, who the one that started off leaving me when I needed her most, and it ended up in my realization I left her long before she left me. Right? And how I trashed that marriage and as a result of my drinking and the way I was living. You know, and I had to go to her and I it's funny, but I was actually scared of that. And she was only 5'2", like 105 pounds. And, you know, but to confront her with all of this stuff, you know, it was tough. It was tough. It was one of those times when I'm sitting there in my car, my head on the steering wheel going, maybe I'm going too far with all this AA stuff. Right? Remember, 105 pounds, 5'2", right? And I'm sitting in the car with my head on the steering wheel. Right? And I saw that I had to beg God to help me have the power to walk in there and just confront all of the stuff from our past that changed both of our lives. And, you know, but I'm still in step eight. I haven't got out of my car yet. Right? I'm still not even sure if I'm going to get out of it. But I already set the appointment, so I'm kind of committed, and I just beg God for the strength to go in. Now, you hear a noise when step 8 turns into step 9. All right. You know the noise? It sounds like this. When I get up to the door and start knocking on it, and then you know you're committed. You know, that's it. And that's when prayer is most useful. Not the months before when I was trying to think about it, praying for the willingness to be willing, to be willing, to be willing, or whatever. That's when the power comes. That's when God flows through me, and into my life and into my actions to the benefit of somebody else. And there's a simple format that I follow. I explain to them why I'm here. I'm in a 12-step program, and one of the steps made me aware of certain things that I obviously wasn't completely clear about before. But what came out of it is I see that there was situations where I probably harmed you. And I ask permission to share that, if it's okay that I share that with them. And I say these. I tell them what the specific harms that I'm aware of are. And then I ask, is there anything else that I'm not aware of that I've missed that you need to tell me about? And then I stop and I listen. Now, Lori happened to have a laundry list, right, of things that she needed to tell me. And it took a little while. It's interesting, too, when somebody has a lot of stuff and a lot of resentment and they're trying to get it all out, you know when it's really starting to work when they start repeating the stuff again. Right? Because you know that when they start hearing themselves repeat it again, they know that they can't think of anything else to tell you. Right? And that doesn't always happen, but it's a good sign when it does. Because I could see that she was getting free. Right? That there was something happening for her. Something happening that she had to do. Right? To get over the things that were eating away at her for so many years. And when she's done, when she says she's done with what she has to say, I just ask, is there anything else that you can think of that you need to tell me? She tried hard to think of more stuff. But there was a lot of pain, I think, that I caused in that relationship. There was a lot of stuff. And that's followed with this. Is there any way, anything that I could do that I could possibly do to set right the wrongs that I've caused you? And then I have to shut up and just listen. Right? And be willing to do whatever it takes to set right the things that she needs from me. Amazing things happen in relationships. This was a situation where I really couldn't talk to her. And since then, we don't necessarily have a relationship. She's still an ex-wife, but we talk a couple times a year, just socially. Right? And there's no resentment. There's no, not old stuff at least. I mean, she might have new stuff, but, But when you talk just a couple times a year, it's usually not might not just be about me. And my perception of her has changed completely too. She's not the monster that she was when we first separated in my mind, right? Because I see some truths about my own behavior and how I affected that relationship, right? There was some other stuff too. That was near the end of my drinking. I wasn't working, But my family had an apartment building. And both of my parents passed away, and my grandmother was left. And my grandmother was too old to handle the apartment building. It was actually my mother's, but everything that my grandmother owned was supposed to go to my mother, but when my mother went first, everything went to my grandmother, so it was all just mixed up. But technically it was my grandmother's money, and I was managing this apartment building, right, and not working and not paying rent, and nobody knew that I wasn't paying rent because I was managing the building. And as my drinking progressed, my job got so important that I started to feel that I was worth a salary as well. And I was way overpaid for the job that I did. But my grandmother passed away before I got to this place, this ninth step, before I got sober. And one of the things that I had to do was graveside amends. And I did it basically the same way. I made out a card just like I did for everybody else, listed the things that I was aware of, but I just did it a little different. I sat quietly at each gravesite separately. I'll just talk about my grandmother, though, since I started with that. Sat at her gravesite quietly, asked God to guide the experience, and just talked to her like she was right in front of me. Right. Reading the cards, this is why I'm here. And these are the harms that I've caused you that I'm aware of. And I asked, is there anything else that I'm not aware of that you need to tell me? And I just sat quietly and listened. Right. And I asked, is there any way that I could anything that I could possibly do to set right this wrong? And I just sat there quietly and listened. And this heavy thought came into my mind that I can't repay her back, but now it's the beneficiaries of the state that are harmed by what I've done, which happened to be my brothers. Naturally, I opened my eyes and looked around and said, where did that come from? You know, but it was a powerful thing to strike me at that moment. Because that had never occurred to me, that the harm at this point was to my brothers. And what I had to do is add that information to the amends that I needed to do with my brothers. Let them know what I had done. And, you know, graveside amends can be really powerful. I had a grandfather and a mother and a father that were all deceased. There wasn't much with my father or my grandfather, but certainly with my mother and especially with my grandmother, because there was a lot of harm caused, because that was she was sort of caught at the end of, you know, I don't know if the term is the best part of my drinking or the worst part of my drinking. She got the worst of it. There was some stuff with my brother. Years before, I had there was drugs involved. There was LSD. There was all kinds of stuff going on. But I ended up sleeping with his girlfriend, and he ended up finding out about it. And it was never talked about for decades. Right? And you know, that was one of my last ones, because I've never really had a good relationship with my brother prior to that and after that. And there was a lot of fear in going to him and bringing that up again. And that was one that I think fueled my desire to sit with people I work with and go over the amends cards, right? Because that caused a lot more pain than was necessary. And I think that if I had someone to sit down and who listened to my cards, we might have said this one might be one to leave alone, because bringing that up stirred up all kinds of stuff that probably was not productive. Right? There's a difference between an apology and an amends. Right? An apology is just a gesture to kind of clear the air for some reason. Doesn't necessarily admit fault. It's just an effort to clear the air for some reason. But an amends is a sincere desire to set right a wrong in hopes that it straightens something out for the future, which wasn't the result of this particular situation. Right? And I had a feeling that that was the case, but at the time that I did that, that was not... Listening to somebody's amends cards was not a practice in my home group. It's something that's been done more recently. So I think that having a neutral party listening to the situation and hearing how you'd approach something can be useful. Although my relationship with my brother is probably as good, if not better, than it's ever been right now. But this is after quite some time after that nine-step amends. Right? But I see happening more often these days with time is reluctance to continue doing it, continuing to make amends. Start to think that, you know, I don't need to do it like I needed to do it before, you know, which is completely wrong. Right? So I don't know that the situation got easier, it got trickier. You start to experience the idea of, you know, early on we're looking at the idea of the lack of power, that was my dilemma. And you start to experience how having power can be a dilemma. Right? Because you start to decide how that's supposed to look, or what you need to do, or what you don't need to do. You know, and you start to fall back into this place where it's good to still have a sponsor, someone to bounce stuff off of, someone who isn't afraid to say, hey, you know, you need to look at this. Because I want to think now with 18 years of sobriety that I don't necessarily need to bounce everything off my sponsor. And a lot of times I don't bounce a lot of stuff off him. Because I don't necessarily like what he always has to tell me. That's part of it. But in there lies the fact that there's a part of me that thinks it's not about drinking anymore. But I'm aware of that. You know, and I do talk to him. But I guess what I'm saying is that it's always hard to sometimes be honest about the things in our lives that are difficult, right, and challenging or scary. Right? But ultimately, the experience with finishing all of those amends, it proved something to me. Is that when I ask for power, power comes. That I saw that those last amends were amends that I absolutely could not make on my own, yet they were made. Every single one of them. And my own experience with that is, I don't hear a lot of people talking about it, although I have heard a few people have a similar experience, and it's not the norm. But what happened after I finished the last amends, my instruction was to sit with it and consider if there's any other amends that I haven't done that I should make. To come to the point where I can honestly say everything's done. And I sat with that for about a month, shared that with my sponsor at the time, who was Joe, some of you know Joe H., who passed away in May this year. Told him that I had finished every single amends that I could possibly think of. And I just sat with that. My experience with that was I went a couple months feeling a little funny. You know the experience when you feel like you have the flu and your head's a little, like, empty? kind of feeling just before you come down with the flu. Well, that lasted for me for 2 or 3 months. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe I need to go to a doctor and see what's wrong with me. Right? And I was talking to some people about it, and it just occurred to me, I don't feel sick, I just feel quiet. And I thought, sheesh. And I realized that what I was actually experiencing was quiet. And I just wasn't used to that. I'd finished everything that I could possibly finish up to that point. And there was a freedom in my life that I had never, ever known. And it came from being in a place where I could look back and see that everything's done in my ninth step. Right? And seeing that there's a power that I could tap into in all areas of my life beyond that will work beyond my own power, that will pick up where I have to stop. You know, it wasn't just about for the ninth step. You know, I see that I've developed a trust in that power, a reliance on that power that I can bring into all areas of my life. Because if it will work over here, this big scary place, the ninth step, certainly can work in all the areas of my life. Right. And I find that more and more it became a constant part of my day. So, when I hear people say that you don't have to finish the ninth step, you know, it's sad. Because what I really hear is that I don't want to finish the ninth step. I'm talking about them. That they don't want to finish the ninth step. Right? And that the chances are that the influences that they had, their sponsor and their home group and the people around them, were saying the same thing. And it's become acceptable. Right? So I think that it is a responsibility for me, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, to have a message of someone who's done it. And to carry that message that it can be done. You can finish the ninth step. And it is worth finishing the ninth step. Right? You know, and it's not, you know, there's an experience to be had from facing those things that we find completely impossible for us to do on our own. And to have to turn to God for help. Right? So, with that, I'm going to stop here. Okay?